This critical point has enormous implications for the act of mind reading. Early in his career, for example, Paul Ekman filmed 40 psychiatric patients, including a woman named Mary, a 42-year-old housewife. She had attempted suicide 3 times, and she survived the last attempt, an overdose of pills, only because someone found her in time and rushed her to the hospital. Her grown children had left home, and her husband was inattentive, and she was depressed. When she first went to the hospital, she did nothing but sit and cry, but she seemed to respond well to therapy. After 3 weeks, she told her doctor that she was feeling much better and she wanted a weekend pass to see her family. The doctor agreed, but just before Mary was to leave the hospital, she confessed that the real reason she wanted a weekend pass was to make another suicide attempt. Several years later, when a group of young psychiatrists asked Ekman how they could tell when suicidal patients were lying, he remembered the film Taken of Mary and decided to see if it held the answer. If the face really was a reliable guide to emotion, he reasoned, shouldn't he be able to look back at the film and see that Mary was lying when she said she was feeling better? Ekman and Friesen began to analyze the film for clues. They played it over and over for dozens of hours, examining in slow motion every gesture and expression. Finally, they saw what they were looking for. When Mary's doctor asked her about her plans for the future, a look of utter despair flashed across her face so quickly that it was almost imperceptible. Ekman calls that kind of fleeting look a microexpression, which is a very particular and critical kind of facial expression. Many facial expressions can be made voluntarily. If I'm trying to look stern as I give you a tongue lashing, I'll have no difficulty doing so, and you'll have no difficulty interpreting my glare. But our faces are also governed by a separate, involuntary system that makes expressions that we have no conscious control over. Few of us, for instance, can voluntarily do AU1, the sadness sign. A notable exception, Ekman points out, is Woody Allen, who uses his frontalis, pars medialis, to create his trademark look of comic distress. Yet we raise our inner eyebrows without thinking when we are unhappy. Watch a baby just as he or she starts to cry, and you'll often see the frontalis, pars medialis, shoot up as if it were on a string. Similarly, there is an expression that Ekman has dubbed the Duchenne smile, in honor of the 19th century French neurologist Guillaume Duchenne, who first attempted to document with a camera the workings of the muscles of the face. If I were to ask you to smile, you would flex your zygomatic major. By contrast, if you were to smile spontaneously, in the presence of genuine emotion, you would not only flex your zygomatic, but also tighten the orbicularis oculi pars orbitalis, which is the muscle that encircles the eye. It is almost impossible to tighten the orbicularis oculi pars orbitalis on demand, and it is equally difficult to stop it from tightening when we smile at something genuinely pleasurable. This kind of smile does not obey the will, Duchenne wrote. Its absence unmasks the false friend. Whenever we experience a basic emotion, that emotion is automatically expressed by the muscles of the face. That response may linger on the face for just a fraction of a second, or be detectable only if electronic sensors are attached to the face. But it's always there. Sylvan Tompkins once began a lecture by bellowing, "The face is like the penis." What he meant was that the face has, to a large extent, a mind of its own. This doesn't mean we have no control over our faces. We can use our voluntary muscular system to try to suppress those involuntary responses. But often, some little part of that suppressed emotion, such as the sense that I'm really unhappy, even if I deny it, leaks out. That's what happened to Mary. Our voluntary expressive system is the way we intentionally signal our emotions. But our involuntary expressive system is in many ways even more important. It is the way we have been equipped by evolution to signal our authentic feelings. You must have had the experience where somebody comments on your expression and you didn't know you were making it, Ekman says. Somebody asks you, what are you getting upset about? Or why are you smirking? You can hear your voice, but you can't see your face. If we knew what was on our face, we would be better at concealing it, but that wouldn't necessarily be a good thing. Imagine if there were a switch that all of us had to turn off the expressions on our face at will. If babies had that switch, we wouldn't know what they were feeling. They'd be in trouble. You could make an argument, if you wanted to, that the system evolved so that parents would be able to take care of kids. Or imagine if you were married to someone with a switch. It would be impossible. I don't think mating and infatuation and friendships and closeness would occur if our faces didn't work that way.